The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. As we head into hour five here, it is a privilege, delight, and honor always to have Congressman John Shadegg in studio with me. He formerly representing the old 4th Congressional District here, head of the Republican Study Committee. He is now a practicing attorney in town, of course, and the head of Shadegg Associates. John, there's a lot to talk about. Obviously, in the political, the story everywhere is Ron DeSantis's announcement. And he had to do it sooner or later, and it's now here. It seems like we've been waiting for Godot this whole time, and he's doing it uniquely on Twitter. The question everyone is really asking, I'd love your thoughts on it, and I've been asking it, is he has an awful lot of money. Something I think they're touting something like $200 million ready to go, an awful lot of money. But he is really down in the poll. I mean, I think it's unprecedented how far away he is from Donald Trump. Now, people will say, well, it doesn't matter this early out. But, some people do worry about Bush and Scott Walker syndrome here a little bit. It's a lot to make up. Anyway, I would just love your sense of his candidacy at this point, regardless of who you support.
Absolutely. First of all, I think it is going to be a fascinating time in American politics and in Republican politics in particular. I guess I have two different reactions to the questions you raised. Number one, I'm a firm believer that polls this far out are abjectly meaningless. Okay. They simply test name ID to a certain degree and maybe initial gut reaction. So if Trump weren't doing well, that would be extremely significant. That he is way out ahead of anybody else, I think, has no substance. There's just way too far to go. Second, my dad, who managed campaigns pretty much all of his life,
wrote the textbook on him.
There you go, which I keep telling myself I'm going to rewrite because the
bring me a copy.
Principles are the same. Sure, that one I can do.
Thanks.
Basically, he thought no poll was meaningless until you had at least two in a row, and that the only thing that mattered in polling was trend. Are you on a trend up or a trend down, or are you on a flat trend, going nowhere for a period of time? In this case, the Trump people have reason to be, excited. He's on a trend up, and he has been for quite a while. But it's just, in my opinion, too far out to give you any meaningful read. And that's particularly true when people do what they're naturally going to do, which is not to say, oh, Trump's climbing. It's, well, Trump versus, and if there's nobody else, well, then it's Trump. But once somebody else gets in, then you see what's happening. In this case, DeSantis has felt he could not get in. He has chosen not to get in. He has become the target of Mr. Trump with some pretty darn vicious ads. And one would expect that to drive his numbers down, but he's not able to do right now, that so far as I know, any visionary ads of his own or to kind of begin to paint for the average American who hardly knows him who he is and what he's about. So I think it's going to be fascinating to see. But I do think that the point raised by your friends who say, yeah, what about Bush, who completely collapsed? And
Scott Walker, right. Scott Walker. These were the crown royal candidates with a lot of that kind of money.
And in politics, people do sometimes collapse. It is, I think, not uncommon for a candidate who has impressed the political movers and shakers.
The donor community, too.
The
right?
donor
yeah.
community, the kind of the focused on community, the people who have the time in their lives right. to read about a DeSantis or a Bush and say, wow, I like all this. And then they get before the body politic writ large and and sometimes they just fail to connect. They can't relate, or the people can't relate to them. And I think that is very real. It clearly did happen to Bush. I liked him early on because I thought, you know, here's a
another good Florida governor.
Here's a regular Bush. Here's a guy that's a little more down to earth, a little less pointy headed, at least than his father.
Yeah.
And yet he collapsed. He couldn't connect. I think that is the single big issue for DeSantis right now. Many of us, you know, liked, perhaps every single person in your audience practically liked what Trump accomplished. But Trump was also able to connect. There are arguments that say he'll connect again right now. I heard one the other day, which I thought was stunning. It was done by a talking head, a female talking head, and she said, look, the only way for the American people who are angry at the corruption, and I mean it, corruption in Washington, is to elect Trump himself and to give him the presidential term they at least believe was stolen from him. But even if that term wasn't stolen from him in the way many of them think, maybe if the Democrats just outmaneuvered him by using the pandemic, when Republicans were sitting on their hands, they were out rewriting election laws everywhere. I can see how somebody might say, I'm not even going to think about Donald Trump or about the offensive side of his character. I'm just going to exact my pound of flesh against the people at the FBI and the people at the Department of Justice and the people in the intelligence community who lied, cheated, and stole. And so it'll be interesting to see if that controls the next race. It'll also be, I think, very interesting to see. And I think the question has been planted, not necessarily fairly planted, but still planted, that DeSantis is going to have a hard time connecting, that he is,
that's the whisper.
You don't want to go get a beer with him.
Yeah. Or more likely, as Peggy Noonan put it, he doesn't want to get a beer with you. That was one insight. I mean, you know, I'm now down to, I used to like every other column. I'm now down to about 1 out of 5. But that was an interesting insight she had in a column a couple weeks ago. We usually talk about, do you like the candidate? The concern about DeSantis is, does he like you? But John, what's kind of interesting to me, and I hadn't thought about it until you said it, is this analysis for Trump is right, regardless of how much you, regardless of whether you love Trump or not. When you are as angry and justifiably angry over what has been done over the last few years and what has been discovered, and we'll get to some of that in a couple segments. If we can, that they just may want to throw the gin bottle through the window.
Absolutely.
And say, you know, this is what you get.
And I think the phraseology that you just used is exactly right. It's they're angry at what has been done to them.
Right.
You know, it's not what has been done to the system. Though that's very scary, it's kind of a little bit intellectual or a little bit vague. They say they're destroying democracy. Well, the left, I think, is destroying democracy. They're cheating on elections. Pretty clearly, the FBI is or has, and so far as we can tell, up to the last election, has continued to. Jim Jordan, my friend, and I served with him, and I loved him when I was there. He got there quite a bit after me, but Jim does a great job of laying it out. And I saw him the other night. Somebody said, "Well, they've stolen the last two presidential elections." And Jim Jordan said, "Forget the last two presidential elections. They've stolen the last 4 elections, you know, including the off-year elections." Mm-hmm. And you look at what the Justice Department has done. And in some ways, they say, "Well, I think the last retort that came back was by the left that said, yeah, we can all be mad at Comey, but the last person Comey harmed by holding his last-minute press conference was Hillary."
Right.
I don't care who you hurt. I don't pay government employees to use my tax money to get involved in elections in any way. Right. That is sacrosanct. You don't do it, whether it's to help Republicans, Democrats, or green pigs. It just doesn't matter. You don't do it. And if you don't have the integrity not to do it, then you ought to pay a price. And right now, the people who have used the government to advance their personal beliefs and used their position in the government to advance their political views aren't being published. Heck, some of them are back on TV right now, right, defending themselves and sounding like they're legitimate.
You know, John, that's an interesting point. You would hope that there would have been a universal or at least bipartisan anger about what has been revealed. When we learned about what was taking place through operations like COINTELPRO, you know, in the 50s, 60s, and 70s that was revealed in the church hearings, this was there was nonpartisan revulsion. And one thing I will say about COINTELPRO, which none of us would support, at least they were going after communists. Here, we had the same kind of apparatus going after an American political party, the Republican Party. Let me take a quick break. You and I will come right back about how that is going with unveiling to the American people the scandals that have taken place. John Shattuck and I will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Representative John Shattuck is my guest, as he is on Wednesdays, talking politics and policy and often philosophy as well. One other thought on the DeSantis-Trump polling disparities, John, I wanted to raise before we got into the scandals of the last few years that have been recently unveiled by the likes of James Comer and Jim Jordan. You know, you made another good point I wanted to zero in on for a moment because I have been undervaluing it a little bit. And that is that, you know, a lot of us think Ron DeSantis has been known, is a known entity. But the truth is, you're right. There is that class of donors. There is the class of activists and lobbyists and political consultants. And there's the group of us who listen to talk radio and watch Fox News. But we're the odd ones, as a friend of mine likes to say. Most Americans aren't there. Most Americans are not doing that. I mean, you know, Fox's or whatever, Newsmax, you know, their biggest audiences hit, you know, about 6 million. Talk radio, you know, probably the biggest show in talk radio, on any given day is, if you added it all together, you'd probably be at about 20 million. And these are elections that over 100 million people are going to be voting in. So we're the odd ones. What we know about DeSantis is not what the rest of Iowa is about to learn, or the rest of New Hampshire is about to learn, or the rest of the Carolinas are about to learn about DeSantis, right? There is that point, too. Now that he has unfurled officially his campaign, they'll get to know him pretty quickly.
I think they'll find out very quickly how well he does as a real-tail politician.
Yeah.
Like I said, I admired Bush, but I thought, well, why isn't he catching on? I went and heard him give a speech, and I was in person in the room, and he left me flat.
Yeah.
And if DeSantis doesn't fire up his audiences, doesn't come across with passion, then I think his candidacy could end very quickly. Now, I hope he does, because I think we need someone young like him to carry the torch at this point for the Republican Party. But passion in politics matters. I know a lot of people would tease me. They would say that when I was running, particularly in the early races, I was so driven to get my point across that I would literally stand on my tiptoes.
Yeah.
And it was because I, in part, wanted to be taller, but in part, it was just I was so worked up at what was happening to the country and what we needed to do. And if I were closely advising Mr. DeSantis right now, I would say, you got to get up on your tiptoes and you got to get passionate. And I think he's got that in him, but I don't think it's necessarily instinctive.
Yeah, he's better at it when he's swatting back at the press.
Yep.
That he's better at it when he's swatting back. Moving an audience when you have the floor and you have the domain as its own separate kind of charisma that is required. And I guess we'll see that, because we haven't had a lot of visuals on that yet. One other thing, if I can divine something from the wisdom of you and your dad, I'm always worried about, I get politics can be negative and it can be fun and it can be fun and it's negativity and there can be some jabs here and there. But, you know, I worry about extreme bitterness in the primaries. I always worry about us writing the Democrats' talking points for the general when one of the candidates who was lambasted as unqualified or worse, you know, can be quoted. Those quotes can be used against them in the general, and they end up getting damaged. We in Arizona don't have a very good history of winning elections when we have bitter primaries. You remember the Conlon-Steiger race, and of course the gubernatorial race last time did not end our way. I think that was one of the most bitter campaigns I'd ever seen, too. This is going to be a bitter campaign between DeSantis and Trump. This is going to be maybe the most bitter. I couldn't think of a Republican primary as bitter as what I think we're going to see here in history. I don't know if you can. I can't. Maybe the attacks on Goldwater. But it wasn't as suffusive as this is with social media and the lay of the media land now.
Negativity is one of the most difficult things to deal with in political campaigns or by political personalities. By and large, you mentioned my dad, he felt passionately that the campaign should include both positive things about your opponent and things that might not reflect the things voters would be looking for in your opponent. Did I say
good things about your candidate
and problems about your opponent? But he was passionate, and he wrote in his book that whatever you brought out that you wanted to say negatively or about your opponent had to be legitimate. So it had to go to, for example, your ability to do the job. So if you had no, for example, executive experience, that would be a point that could be brought out. If you claim to be a diehard fiscal conservative, but your record in prior offices was that you had spent a lot, that was a legitimate issue to bring out. If you had some personality problem, drinking problem in your family or something, that was not legitimate, and he felt that strongly. But there's also the tactical use of that information. And I don't know that I ever heard him say it, but I strongly believe that when you need to bring out some negative points, the candidate shouldn't be doing that. And
oh, that's interesting.
I would apply that to right now. I have known Kevin McCarthy since pretty much when he first came to the Congress. I was there. I don't think I took an instant liking to him, but he and I both worked on the party platform for the convention in Minnesota, and I came to admire him. And I came to admire him not because he is exactly like me, but because I admire the fact that he knew what he thought. He had a plan to get where he was going, and he would implement the plan. He knew that leading requires inspiring people, and it requires that you, quite frankly, like all human relations, show that you care about them as individuals. And Kevin, I don't know that Kevin had an enemy in the Congress when he got there or when I left, because he made a point of being respectful and decent to everyone. I think Kevin is doing a spectacular job.
He's got the right mix.
I think he has the right mix. And I think I personally thought the 13 votes were not a bad thing. They were a good thing. I had observed in other speakers that if they knew the conference, so if they literally got to know all the members in the House, Republican members in the House, then they knew where they were coming from. They knew he cared, that particular leader, and he would listen to them. Kevin would do that. I think the 13 votes forced Kevin to get to know his conference better.
Interesting.
And I think he's now, because he knows them better personally, I think he's now able to lead them and got this vote, which nobody thought he could get. Yeah. And I think it's going to keep going in that direction.
Let me take a quick commercial break, and we'll come back, because I do want to talk about some of the leaders in that conference who are heading oversight and judiciary, like Comer and Jordan. I want to talk about that when we come back. John Shattuck is my guest. He and I will be right back. Congressman John Shadegg is my guest. He is an attorney in town, having represented the 4th Congressional District in Arizona, the old 4th Congressional District in Arizona, for 16 years, head of the Republican Study Committee, part of the famous class of 1994, now the head of Shadegg Associates here in town. John, the stuff that people are finding out through the investigations that the likes of James Comer and Jim Jordan have been holding, the hearings they've been holding, the reports they've been issuing. You did a lot of that when you were in Congress, too. You did a lot of investigative hearings. I'm obviously extremely grateful. We wanted this. We need more of it. We'll get more of it. Somehow, some way, it feels like it's not quite connecting. I don't know if it's that they're not as exactingly clean in their conclusions. I don't know if it's because they're not as exactly clean in their methods or means. It's just they don't seem to be clean shots for some reason, and maybe that's just a higher standard I'm looking for that no one can meet. But it seems there should be more about this stuff. And I understand the media will never give us a fair hearing, but it just seems like it would be easier to distill and recommunicate some of the things we found out.
I think we have to do a better job of distilling it. For example, we by now should have created an atmosphere in which a phrase you used a few minutes ago, bipartisan revulsion, would be so broadly spread in the country that Peter Strzok wouldn't go on MSNBC. Right. They wouldn't ask him,
right?
Because people would be so repulsed.
They would, and ashamed of it. Yeah, ashamed about it.
And sick of what he did, how he used his office. I mean, the guy lied to the FISA court, and then openly discussed with his cohort in these emails, which you know have to have been on government servers. Where he says, well, I've got a fallback strategy where I'm going to achieve my partisan goal. Mm-hmm. And he's talking with his girlfriend.
Paramour. Though, paramour is the word
so,
I like.
So we should have the American people repulsed by people like Strzok so that they can't even get on the air. But that's not easy to do, but it's phenomenally difficult to do when the press is where it is. But you play the hand you're dealt. I think, for example, that Jim Jordan is doing a fantastic job. He is a regular guy. He's believable. He refuses to wear a coat. Lots of times he has his tie down. But he is passionate without being overboard. And if you listen to him carefully, he gets across his points. But some of these points are extremely complicated, even for me to follow, and I spent years there. For example, if you sit back and listen to Comer and you sort through all the information, they are telling you a pretty shocking story. So they're telling you they subpoenaed 12 banks, I think is the number. And then they tell you only 4 responded. I guess the others just said, a pox on your house, we don't have to obey a congressional subpoena. So they think that 12 banks will have these payments that processed through them, but only 4 responded. But out of the 4, they've come up with, is it 9? I think 9 Biden family members
right,
who have seen money come out of the financial institution through multiple LLCs and go to 9 separate individuals who received cash. And they could be a daughter, they could be a daughter-in-law, they could be a brother, they can be another brother, they can be a sister, they can be a wife. Karl Rove is a tremendous communicator. And laugh at it if you want. And anytime Karl Rove needs to get across a complicated point, he holds up his whiteboard and people laugh about it. But it helps. I'd like to see Jim Comer do 2 things differently. One, I'd like him to raise the issue before he makes the charge.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to have him to have never said what he was subpoenaing from the FBI until they refused to give it, and then say, how can you refuse to give it? You know, it has very damaging evidence. But the second thing, I'd like to see him do a chart that he could hold up every time he goes on TV with 12 boxes and the names of the 12 banks. And then four boxes, you know, you have a red X by eight of the boxes saying they wouldn't answer our subpoena. Now you have four banks left, and then you have how many, 23 different LLCs? Yeah. And you show the money, and down at the bottom, if you don't want to say the name of the individual, you don't want to say Sally Biden,
yeah,
say daughter-in-law, and then put a number. $15,000. Granddaughter.
Hold it right there. I want to. Yeah, you're onto it. You're doing what I want. I would like to see done. Well, I want to pick up on that when we come back. We'll be right back. John Shattuck is my guest, Congressman John Shattuck. We're talking about communicating the findings of what we have found so far in the investigations from House Oversight and Judiciary. And John, you're onto it here. And maybe we were spoiled by the first, you know, Republican leadership we had seen back in the 90s. But my memory is, you could go to the Speaker's website. In that case, it was Gingrich. You could go to your committee's website, the Republican Study Committee. You could go to some of these committees' websites, and they laid out everything. And that was in a time when the internet was really, in some respects, in its infancy. And in fact, yeah, it was completely, you know, getting its sea legs. Today, you go to the Speaker's website, and you can't find their debt reduction plan. You go to the House Oversight Committee. There's no graphics. There's no itemized chart of the things they found. There's nothing you can copy and send around and spread around on Twitter that has simple bullet points along the lines of what you're saying. I know it's sometimes popular for us to level charges about the inability of our party leaders to communicate, but we've done it before. I know the fact that we have done it before, and we had that kind of leadership, and we had that kind of communication skills. I mean, Gingrich was uniquely qualified as a community, uniquely gifted. I don't think Jim Jordan's any less gifted. But something isn't going right at the staff level. We should be able to go to the website and easily find this stuff, and we can't.
The bottom line of at least the investigation of the so-called Biden crime family is that they have established that money was flowing from former foreign countries. So you could have at the top of my little chart the name of the country.
Right.
And you could have the numbers we think.
Right.
So we'll say 20 million.
Right.
And maybe the names of some of the oligarchs. And then the bank that it went to in the United States. And then a list of all the different LLCs. Mm-hmm. I think the names of the LLCs would humor people.
Mm-hmm.
And arrows going back and mm-hmm. forth showing money goes from one to another to another to another to another.
Which itself might have been a violation if they're deliberately trying to conceal, right? That would be a violation of law too, right there. But
and then
ahead.
You see yep. it going to a Biden family
right,
member.
Right.
I know that when Americans see an elected official enter office at one personal wealth level and leave at a dramatically
yeah.
higher one,
yeah.
they say, wow, how
yeah.
did that happen?
Yeah.
The guy was making, you know, a kind of a working man's salary, and now he's a multimillionaire, or she is a multimillionaire. And it seems to me that just the numbers and the names, or the numbers and the relationships, if members of my family had gotten richer while for the 16 years I was in Congress, people would have had a right to question, well, how did that happen? And if it didn't happen to just one of them, it happened to six of them, then you'd go, what? And if for some of them it was dramatic, you'd say, well, where'd that money come from? And if it came from Ford Motor Company because they invented the intermittent wiper, windshield wiper, well, you'd have an explanation. But if it came from Romania and this particular family member was 16, or God forbid, 4, you know, you kind of say, what was that for?
Yeah.
You know, and in this case, it's pretty clear that there's no product and no service that moved from Biden family members to these LLCs, to the banks, and to the foreign individual who put it up. And if that were in a graphic, the American people might say, we're not going to sit by while the FBI refuses to look at this. If they won't look at it, then we want the Congress to look at it. And if they won't look at it, then I want the AG of Arizona to look at it. But she wouldn't. but we need to get these points across because corruption is, I think, rampant. And it will destroy this country very quickly. We need to communicate to the people. And I think in their gut, they know things are wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they do, too. I mean, there's no reason someone who is such a hot mess as Hunter Biden would be able to charter private airplanes to custody hearings or whatever, parental support hearings across the country if his last name weren't Biden. And the reason that he made money because his last name was Biden has become really, I think, intuitively known by most people, but it needs to be, yes, it needs to be graphically shown. And the idea that people make money is not what we're against. What we're against is using the government service. How did a man who has always worked for the government, Joe Biden, how did a man who has always worked for the government have these three, acquire these three homes? And it's not just that, though, John. It's that when people are having a hard time. It's that when people are having a hard economic time as well. There's something there that I think will, aside from, you know, what you want to say about Russia, Ukraine, aside from what you want to say about our withdrawal from Afghanistan, aside from what you want to say about the Middle East and other policies of this president, I think that's a ripe issue. I mean, Jimmy Carter worked it to a fairly well in 1976 with the "I'll never lie to you, there won't be a scandal here." I mean, it was a promise that he couldn't keep, but that's what works. People wanted to get rid of scandal and corruption.
And it's not just that it seems like certain officials with power come out ahead and you can't figure out how.
Yeah.
It is that we have now clearly documented the unequal Justice Department or the unequal justice system.
Yeah. Yeah.
While they are scrutinizing Trump and going to the nth degree.
Right. Standards that we have never seen before.
To nail him for so-called Russian collusion when, in fact, there was none. They have the scale on the other side of the on the other side pushed all the way down, saying, "Well, there's nothing to investigate about Hillary having a server at her house. There's nothing to investigate about her crushing records with a hammer or with bleach bit." And oh, by the way, once she's not a candidate, we're done. We're not going to look at her for anything.
Nothing to see her anymore.
It's over and done.
Ends justify the means too much.
It's not even two-tiered. We have a bifurcated justice system. And if you're on the left, you don't have to worry. If you're on the right, you've got to worry about everything.
You've got to worry about everything. You betcha. John Shattuck, thank you, sir.
Hey, lots of fun.
Be right back. Think about the Biden economy as it regards us. Bank failings, stock market volatility, possible recession, inflation that's just simply not transitory, but hardened. What about an investment as offered by YRefi that's not correlated to the stock market or the Fed, any of those things? An investment where you can compound your income and interest, where you can turn your monthly income on or off, whatever you like, with no loss of principal if you need your money back at any time. An investment in a portfolio where there are no fees. It's a secure and collateralized portfolio that delivers an up to 10.25% rate of return. YRefi is based here locally. I encourage you to stop by their offices on Scottsdale Road in the 101. I've been there. And I can tell you, you will not get a sales pitch. No one's going to ask you to sign anything. When you meet with the team at YRefi, you'll see why I trust them so much, and you can too. YRefi is a due diligence approved firm, and as I say, you can earn up to a 10.25% rate of return, a 10.25% fixed rate of return. Check them out at investyrefi.com. That's the word invest, the letter Y, then refy.com, or call 888-YRefi34. I was thinking about corruption, and you know, part of the ingenious design of checks and balances that we get from James Madison was obviously in the main about the powers and the separations of powers, but it was also about parties and people and a check on each other with legitimate differences between interests that would keep each other in check, which is why you get the impression and understanding that one party is trying to eliminate an entire other party, trying to do it through censorship, trying to do it through defamation. And it does yield not only anti-Republican and anti-Democratic ends, but corrupt ends. As Madison wrote to Jefferson, as in too small a sphere, oppressive combinations may too easily be formed against the weaker party, and equally in an extensive one, a defensive concert may be rendered too difficult against the oppression of those trusted with administration if it is taken too far and if it is not checked strongly enough. Madison was right about that. We always saw that corruption was a potential political problem here. I don't think we could have seen or envisioned the scale, nor do I think we could have seen or envisioned the lack of interest in investigating and highlighting and exposing it, as we have from the media that we are surrounded by now. But nor would we have ever suspected a media that we are surrounded by now that was in it and in the tank for exclusively one side. Rather than investigating government, whoever is in power, they are investigating the party. And if the party is in power, they will be the devil. If the party is out of power, they will be the devil. That's the media we have now. Understanding that is the first step in beginning to understand why there is so much rampant corruption. That, too, is on the heads of the media. Until tomorrow, God bless you all. I'm Seth Leibson. David, thank you. Class is dismissed.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.